Now, the person who was going to ask a question as soon as we started, oh, here she's coming in, I think. Now, so we're going to get into Jonestown now, but did you have a question that you wanted to ask just before the break?
Mark Lane.
Oh, Mark Lane, yeah. I think I don't know too much about that. I mean, the political connections are myriad and tend to be... Right. The actors are either the far left or the far right. I agree with that. Okay, this is from this book, was Jonestown, a CIA medical experiment. This is some general background now. Okay, there's this guy, James Franck, who won the 1925 Nobel Prize in Physics, who came over to be part of the Manhattan Project, which created the atomic bomb. And that's sort of precursor of the paperclip project, which we'll get to in future slides. He recruited Lawrence Layton into the Manhattan Project. So that's the connection between these people. Now we're going to go to this Layton family. This Hugo Philipp and Anita Lee Halbert married in Germany in 1914, and they moved to the United States. They had these two daughters, Eva and Lisa. This is Lisa's birth date here. Lisa is this person. Eva doesn't really figure into the story. Lisa worked for the CIA at Berkeley. The author of this book was Jonestown, a CIA medical experiment, got all this information from the public record by just piecing it together, bit by bit by bit by bit. And the documentation and the references is pretty solid and convincing. So she worked for the CIA at Berkeley, and her job at the library, her job was to keep track of all the left-wing literature taken out of the library and the names of the people who took it, those books out, and report that to the CIA. Berkeley's got a lot of really top-notch people at it, such as Richard Offshey. Lisa married Lawrence Layton, who was recruited to the Manhattan Project by James Franck. He later worked at Dugway Proving Ground, where radiation experiments were done, including release of radioactivity for wind dispersal over civilian populations. He was an expert in dispersal of biological and chemical weapons. And that Dugway Proving Ground was also one of the sites where Army LSD research was conducted. So this couple had four children. Deborah, who married Phil Blakey, she almost murdered him. Lawrence Jr., Annalisa, and Thomas. And these two are not so involved in the picture. Lawrence Jr. was on site at the People's Temple. Lisa was on site at the People's Temple in Jonestown in British Guiana. And Deborah was on site there. And she was the chief financial officer for the People's Temple operation. She left Jonestown shortly before the mass suicide and went back to the Georgetown, the capital of British Guiana, accompanied by the CIA chief of station for Georgetown. Phil Blakey was an interesting guy with a international arms sales and British intelligence background, if I remember right. Now here this is where it really starts to get convincing and amazing. So we've all heard about Jonestown. We all know that Jim Jones had this group of people, and he was in Ukiah, California, and then all of a sudden he moved to the middle of the jungle in British Guiana. And I assume we all had the same experience I had. We just sort of take that at face value. Here's this nut. He moves down to the middle of the jungle in British Guiana, but like, how did he ever choose that location? Who scouted it out? Like, what about the logistics of getting all the lumber, all the oil drums, all the everything down to the middle of the jungle in British Guiana? You got to build an airport, you got to this is a huge, huge project. Well, it turns out that this wasn't just jungle before the People's Temple arrived. It was the Shalom Project from 1973 to 1975, and Phil Blakey oversaw the engineering development of the site in its transition from the Shalom Project to the People's Temple. What was the Shalom Project? It was a CIA operation for training black mercenary guerrillas for operations in Angola. This was a CIA training site. This was not a random, unconnected site. That's just some general background. Okay, we're going to go, we're going to pick up Jonestown kind of as we bop along here through these crystal clear slides. Okay, we've heard part of this story. We've got, here's J. Edgar Hoover. He's corresponding with Esther Brooks, who's creating Manchurian candidates. Patty Hearst is a Manchurian candidate. Her identity of Tanya is deliberately programmed in by Donald DeFries, who's from Vacaville State Prison, which was an MK search site, which was also a site for the UCLA Violence Project. Vacaville's a CIA research site. Patty Hearst is connected down to Jolly West, who's her expert witness in her trial, who says, in effect, she's a Manchurian candidate, DDNOS level. He's the expert witness for Jack Ruby. Let's come back. Oh, Jack Ruby, some of you may recall, is connected to Lee Harvey Oswald. I went to one of the JFK assassination meetings in Dallas a couple of years ago, where a guy presented a bunch of information, including a photocopy of a letter by J. Edgar Hoover dated 1960, expressing concern that Lee Harvey Oswald had been doubled. The FBI was on top of Lee Harvey Oswald, knew who he was, and was tracking him systematically well before the assassination. So that connects J. Edgar Hoover to Lee Harvey Oswald, which connects over to Jack Ruby. Okay, how does Wounded Knee get in there? Wounded Knee is the Indian uprising where the FBI were shooting up the Sioux Indians. Russell Means was heavily involved in that. What does Russell Means have to do with Jonestown? Well, Jim Jones was a good PR guy. When Patty Hearst was kidnapped, he offered William Randolph Hearst a program to set up a collection of money, a donation of money, to pay the ransom for the SLA, the Symbionese Liberation Army. And the SLA was demanding this huge like $170 million from William Randolph Hearst for the release of Patty Hearst. Jim Jones offered to set up this fund, but William Randolph Hearst said no. The net outcome was that the SLA also wanted food donated to the poor people that they thought they were representing in the revolution. So a committee was set up to do food distribution financed by William Randolph Hearst. According to this book, the way that food distribution was done was Jim Jones got control of the mechanism, and he brought people from the People's Temple down to be the homeless and poor people who received the food, and the same food was redistributed around the network 6 times, constantly being picked up by new People's Temple people, taken back to the distribution point. So actually only 1/6 as much food was purchased as it appeared, and the rest was skimmed by the People's Temple. Russell Means was on the committee that oversaw this operation, and Russell Means' wife was bailed out of jail in Oregon the year before at a cost of $19,000 by Jim Jones. Who was working for Disney? Russell Means works for Walt Disney, and that's nice to know. So this arrow actually goes over here to Mickey Mouse. Okay, so we did Vacaville State Prison, MK Search, that's all connected into Patty Hearst, Donald DeFries. We've got that part. We've got MK Ultra connected to UCLA. What's that MK Ultra got to do with that Sugi U-2 base? That's the U-2 spy plane. Well, that's according to information from JFK assassination researchers that I haven't independently confirmed, that was one of the MK Ultra sites. Lee Harvey Oswald was stationed there. U-2 was the plane that Gary Powers went down in. It was a spy plane that overflew the Soviet Union. It was also used for surveillance of Martin Luther King. That's an acknowledged fact. The FBI used U-2 airplanes to keep track of him. According to a book which is a little shaky in terms of its documentation, the people who were consulted on the mental state of Gary Powers, the pilot of the U-2 that was downed, included Ewan Cameron, who was an MKUltra contractor, who did the experimentation on Linda McDonald that I told you about earlier. Ewan Cameron was also one of the people who went over and interviewed the Nazi war criminals at Nuremberg to do mental status exams on them. So the FBI's in there fairly tight. Let's just talk about MKUltra, MKSearch assassination connection. So this is now out beyond Oliver Stone. And we're going to pick up JFK, a little bit of Jonestown, a little bit of this and that here. So we've got MKSearch. Carl Pfeiffer was a contractor for MKSearch and MKUltra. One of the sites that he worked at is the New Jersey Reformatory at Bordentown, which was in some of those preliminary MKUltra lists that I showed. Now, in Walter Bord's book, Mind Control, Operation Mind Control, he talks about Louis Castillo. Louis Castillo was arrested by the FBI, the Philippines equivalent of the FBI, on suspicion of being there to assassinate Marcos. In 300 pages of transcripts of the interrogation of Louis Castillo by the Philippines FBI that's in the possession of the JFK assassination researcher who told me where G.H. Estabrook's personal papers are, Louis Castillo describes very clearly, and this is also described in Walter Bord's book, having multiple personality disorder. So here's a potential assassin of Marcos who describes undocumented multiple personality disorder, who was at the New Jersey Reformatory at Bordentown at the same time as it was an MKSearch hallucinogen site and an MKUltra hallucinogen site. So we've got Lee Harvey Oswald, who's at Tsugi Air Force Base, which is apparently an MKUltra research site, who's connected over to Jack Ruby, who's connected to Jolly West, who's an MKUltra contractor, who's the expert witness for Patty Hearst, who's Manchurian candidate identity Tanya is created by Donald DeFries from Vacaville State Prison, which is an MK search site, which takes us back to the New Jersey Reformatory at Bordentown. This is all just random coincidence, as I'm sure you appreciate. Okay, how about JFK CIA mind control research connections? I might come back to Jonestown in more detail. I'm just trying to get through all these slides here. Cool, this is a very pretty little diagram with CIA at the hub, and then we've basically got a wheel going all the way around. There's a game that I saw in the newspaper called, I don't know the exact name of it, but it's basically who was in a movie with Kevin Bacon. And the purpose of the game is, you can name any Hollywood star, and within six steps, you can get for that person to Kevin Bacon. Because this person was in a movie with this person who was in a movie with this person who was in a movie with Kevin Bacon. So this is the same logic here. We can start anywhere. We can connect Jolly West to the CIA. Neil Burch is a CIA Air Force Military Office of Naval Research mind control consultant in Houston. Robert Heath is a CIA military funded brain electrode researcher at Tulane. Well, let's just go through this random assortment of individuals here. Okay, Robert Heath is doing brain electrode implant and other research for the CIA in Tulane. He publishes a paper with Bernie Salzberg. Bernie Salzberg publishes with Neil Burch, who's funded by the CIA and the military. Neil Burch publishes an edited book. Contributor of a chapter to that book is Jolly West, who describes the UCLA violence project in the book edited by Neil West. Jolly West interviews Jack Ruby. Jack Ruby shoots Lee Harvey Oswald. Okay, well, that's interesting. That's the end of the story. Except, let's run back around this way. Robert Heath publishes with Francisco Silva, who's still alive, who I'm going to try and interview in Baton Rouge. Francisco Silva is a Cuban psychiatrist who left in the random year of 1959, which is when Castro took over, to take up residence in Louisiana and work and publish with Robert Heath, who told my secretary that Francisco Silva is a very wonderful person. In the Warren Commission documents, there's uncorroborated testimony by Lee Harvey Oswald that in 1963, prior to the assassination, he lived with Francisco Silva and was temporarily employed at the hospital where Francisco Silva worked. I'm just sort of playing mind games with you. This is all just meaningless coincidence. Okay. Project Paperclip and mind control research. A Okay, CIA, we heard about Alan Dulles already. He's the director of the Central Intelligence Agency before George Bush was the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, which in turn was before George Bush was the president. Alan Dulles is head of the CIA during the MKUltra program and obviously was aware of it and oversaw it. The CIA goes to Alan Dulles, which goes back to this Reinhard Gehlen guy, who is the German spy master that was recruited by Dulles to become our boy spying against the Russians, our enemies who were previously were our friends. Reinhard Gehlen is, in effect, a Nazi war criminal. Comes down to here. Project Paperclip is a fully documented project that's one of a group of projects, including National Interest, Project 63. There's something with the word blood in it, Bloodstone. There's a bunch of other projects, but Paperclip is the best known one. There's several books about it. Project Paperclip is a program set up by the CIA and military intelligence to bring Nazi war criminals into the United States through a mechanism that routed them around the State Department. State Department rules were that if you're a Nazi war criminal, you couldn't emigrate to the United States. But there was a mad scramble at the end of the Second World War involving the U.S., Canada, British, French, German, and Russian governments who were all scrambling to get their hands on German scientists. And there was all kinds of like recruiting drives and et cetera, et cetera. And American teams would actually go into like the Russian sector and go into a place where German scientists were being held and sneak those guys out of there. So it was quite an intense little party that was going on. In Project Paperclip, this is totally documented, all types of scientists were brought over to the United States. Film experts, ball bearing experts, lubricants, rockets, every aspect of science and technology of interest to the military. It included some somewhat obscure people like Wernher von Braun. Wernher von Braun was head of the rocket program. He was the guy who was in charge of the V-2 rockets that were used to bomb Britain, which were created at the Mittelwerk. The labor for the Mittelwerk was supplied from Camp Dora. When the American troops liberated Camp Dora, they found 6,000 corpses on the ground. It's estimated that about 20,000 people were worked to death out of Camp Dora building the V-2 rockets. Wernher von Braun is documented as being on site at the Mittelwerk at least 20 times and being at meetings of V2 oversight personnel where the use of prisoners being worked to death was discussed and condoned. And the workers would sometimes attempt to sabotage the rockets by urinating on the parts or tampering with the rockets. The typical response to that was that the entire work crew would be instantly hung in their work tunnel. He was also a member of the SS, and there's a correspondence on U.S. space program stationery to a journalist in which Wernher von Braun admits that he was an SS officer. So he was a Nazi war criminal who couldn't be brought in through a normal kind of visa process. Another person who was brought in through Paperclip or another related project was Albertus Strughold. Albertus Strughold is regarded as the father of aviation medicine. There's a library named after him at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio. He was honored by the Daughters of the American Revolution for his contribution to aviation medicine, and the Texas State Legislature declared a one-time state memorial day named after him in, I believe it was the 1960s. Albertus Strughold was not a nice person. People on his own administrative level, people who reported to him, and people that he reported to were all tried and found guilty at Nuremberg of war crimes. He was not even interviewed by the U.S. lawyers responsible for that sector of Nuremberg. The types of experiments that these people did included things like putting people in a pressure chamber and dropping the pressure instantly to about 60,000 feet to simulate somebody being blown out of a cockpit if they were a U.S. pilot. What would happen then is they would claw at their faces, experience excruciating pain, and die, either actually die or almost die. The ones who died would be taken out of the chamber, their heads would be cut open, then their heads would be submerged underwater, their brains would then be sliced open to to determine whether there was air emboli in their cerebral arteries. Another type of experiment done by these people was to attempt to find an antidote to seawater so that downed German pilots in the North Sea could drink seawater. So these people were given forced feedings of seawater for days on end, which then would be doctored with various different substances to see whether any of the substances would prevent these subjects from dying. This is major, full-tilt, Nazi doctor, war crime stuff. And probably over 1,000 of these kind of scientists were brought in over under Project Paperclip. The Nazi war criminals were examined by a team of psychiatrists, including Ewan Cameron, who did LSD and mescaline research, who was an MK Ultra contractor. LSD and mescaline research was also funded by MK Ultra, and mescaline research was done by the Nazi war criminals in the prisoner of war camps. So Ewan Cameron probably got the bright idea of LSD and mescaline research from the Nazi war criminals. And according to this book, which is not real rock solid in its documentation, he was still in network up in the early 1960s when the U-2 pilot went down. So the only people who are missing from this fully, completely documented history are the psychological warfare experts. It is not plausible that the only kind of scientists out of the full range of military expertise that were not brought over was the psychological warfare experts. And a guy who was a deep ops character in Vietnam described being out in the field and coming across U.S. and VC personnel who were all totally wasted on some sort of hallucinogen trip. And their job would simply be to extract these guys and leave the VC, who are just completely out of it, on the ground. He told me which specific location in the United States would be the most likely place to find some of these paperclip psychological warfare experts, so I'm going to pursue that. Let's just take a look at the brain electrode implant research. Now, let's say it's just not believable that the CIA and the military have been creating Manchurian candidates. It's too much. It's science fiction. Well, what do we know for a fact that they've been doing? We know that they've been giving kids, if you do milligrams per kilogram or micrograms per kilogram, big time street doses of LSD, days, weeks, and months, and a year, up to years in a row. We know that they've been implanting non-therapeutic brain electrodes in children as young as 11 years old on an experimental basis. And we know that they've been wiping out people's entire personal histories with 102 ECT treatments and massive sleep induction through drugs for no therapeutic reason whatsoever. But we don't think they would go as far as creating a Manchurian candidate. So it doesn't add up. What we know for an absolute documented fact is that they've gone way beyond monkeying around with some amnesia barriers and new identities. So what's the story on brain electrode implant research? Now, here's a name you might recognize. Well, brain electrode implant research was funded by the CIA and MKUltra in conjunction with the Office of Naval Research. There's a lot of joint funding of various projects by Office of Naval Research and the CIA. The Office of Naval Research funded both Neil Birch and the CIA. And Neil Birch published that thing by Jolly West. Jolly West started the UCLA Violence Project, which was going to be at Vacaville, which is where Donald DeFries was. He recruited a brain electrode implant psychiatrist who was part of a brain electrode implant team at Harvard, Frank Irvin, to be part of the UCLA Violence Project. He denies in his chapter in the book by Neil Birch that there was any intention to do brain electrode implants, but the available evidence suggests that actually, in fact, the plan was to stick brain electrodes in some of these prisoners at Vacaville, and the concept was that you would use this for tracking their whereabouts, and if they were off restricted locations or there was a certain kind of discharge from their brain, you could then transmit a signal to them to arrest their behavior so that they could be picked up by the police. He's also funded by Army Intelligence. Army Intelligence funded Neil Birch. Army Intelligence funded Robert Heath at Tulane, who did brain electrode implant research. We saw him on the previous page. The Office of Naval Research funded Jose Delgado at Yale, who did brain electrode implant research. This is the guy that Harold Leaf sent a patient into. His experiments include sticking electrodes in brains, as I mentioned, and then pouring in various types of hallucinogens to see what would be the effect on their perception, their behavior, and electrical activity in the brain. This guy, Jose Delgado, who's tightly in network, he's famous for a videotape of a bull charging at him, and then he pushes the transmitter box, which sends a signal to the electrode implanted in the bull's brain, and the bull turns away. He also has a series of papers, which are in my Jose Delgado file, where he does this kind of research on cats, and he refers to the cats that he's got brain electrodes in that he's controlling by a transmitter as mechanical toys, which by loose association reminds me of a book called Man, the Mechanical Misfit, written by G.H. Esterbrook. He also describes a technical innovation in an 11-year-old boy who had brain electrodes implanted for non-therapeutic reasons. Previously, you had to have wires connecting the transmitter box directly to the electrode terminals that were sticking through the skull. In this 11-year-old boy, however, Jose Delgado had figured out how to have a remote transmitter without a direct wire connection. He describes pushing a button in this otherwise normal 11-year-old boy's brain transmitter box, and the boy starts being confused about his identity, wondering whether he's a girl, and talking about wanting to marry Jose Delgado. He pushes another button, and this behavior stops. Another experiment with a 16-year-old girl who looks like maybe a mild borderline, premorbidly, involves sticking these brain electrodes in, and there's actually pictures in the paper that you photocopy when you go to the medical school library that's in a journal on the shelf, where in one picture she's got this vacant, stupid grin on her face. Push another button on the panel box, and she's pounding the wall. So they are showing actual photographs of markedly different behavioral states, totally controlled by remote transmitters and brain electrode implants. But, you know, these guys wouldn't be using hypnosis to create Manchurian candidates. Let's look at the temporal lobe epilepsy military mind control research story just for a minute. Let's try and think about the history of multiple personality disorder. What are some of the bogus reasons why MPD is not real? Well, one of the big arguments is it's really temporal lobe epilepsy. So we know that temporal lobe epilepsy has been used as one of the arms of Manchurian candidate denial. Okay, well, here we have how that little network works. We got Robert Heath, who's doing non-therapeutic brain electrode implants plus brain electrode implants on temporal lobe epilepsy subjects. That's all funded by military intelligence and the CIA. We've got temporal lobe epilepsy as a phenomenon. Frank Irvin, who's recruited by Jolly West to the UCLA Violence Project, and Mark Sweet write a book called Violence in the Brain, where they're describing doing brain electrode implants experiments on people with temporal lobe epilepsy. One of their subjects had a very unusual form of temporal lobe epilepsy. He was driving a truck in Los Angeles and blanked out and came to in Phoenix. So actually, these people were doing brain electrode implants on multiples. Jolly West said, it could be alcoholics, but the description, remember, this guy drove a truck from UCLA to Phoenix. That's a little bit much for alcohol blackout. But some of the other case histories clearly sound dissociative in nature. But they're calling them temporal lobe epilepsy, just like Jolly West said Jock Ruby had temporal lobe epilepsy. There's this misinformation in the literature that DID is actually due to temporal lobe epilepsy, and there's 9 authors of a series of papers in the early to mid-1980s pumping this DID as really temporal lobe epilepsy line. So this shows you how this research works, because I haven't done this, but the hypothesis is now these 9 authors are somehow going to be in network. So the odds are the 9 authors of the papers published in the 80s saying that DID is really just temporal lobe epilepsy, they're going to be in network in this mind control old boy network somehow. I just haven't researched that up. Okay, borderline personality disorder, when multiples are really just borderlines, is another backup strategy. How does borderline personality disorder tie up with military mind control research? Well, DID is iatrogenic. They're really just borderlines. Martin Horn says that, Richard Offshee says that. Martin Horn worked for MKUltra. MKUltra is connected to MKNaomi. MKNaomi was also conducted at Edgeware Arsenal. Edgeware Arsenal is a place where Amadeo Marazzi worked. Amadeo Marazzi did LSD research for the Air Force in Minnesota. and it was funded by Air Force Intelligence. Robert Heath also did LSD research. LSD research was done by Nazi scientists and war criminals. Nazi scientists and war criminals were imported into Edgware Arsenal frequently, and one of the people that I researched was, I forget his first name now, Wagner Jorg, who